This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Mohsen Hamid, is a novelist who has lived in the East and the West and is very worried about both. He grew up in Lahore, Pakistan, and returns to the country for a couple of months each year. His family still lives there. He went to college in Princeton and to law school at Harvard. He recently moved from Manhattan to London. Hamid's novel Moth Smoke is set in Lahore and centers around a young man who is the Pakistani counterpart of an American yuppie. He works for a bank, but when he loses his job, he falls from the middle class into a life of crime. The Village Voice called Moth Smoke a descendant of hard-boiled lit and film noir, a darkly amusing book about sex, drugs, and class warfare in post-colonial Asia. We called Mohsen Hamid in London yesterday. Your family lives in Lahore. What do you hear from them?
Well, from my family in Lahore, I hear that all the banks are working one day out of every two. All the foreign corporations have sent home their staffs. But my parents are right now in Islamabad, and there things are a bit more intense. The embassies have sent home all their dependents and non-essential people. And when my parents went out for dinner earlier this week, in the restaurant they were having dinner in, there were a number of war journalists who'd come to cover the conflict. And as you imagine, they were pretty frightened by the end of the meal.
What did they overhear?
Well, people were talking about, you know, everything from kinds of weapon systems that would be used to the kinds of forces that would be deployed to the potential for civil war in Pakistan. And I think if you're sitting at a meal and somebody's having that sort of detached conversation right next to you, it really rams home the fact that life has changed.
Your new novel, Moth Smoke, starts with a Sufi story. Would you tell the story?
Well, in the 16th century, in the Mughal Empire, there were a number of princes who were competing for the throne, and this Sufi saint, and Sufis are these sort of mystical, you know, sect of Muslims who believe in finding, you know, unity with God through self-purification. So they're mystics, much like, you know, much like Martin Buber is a Jewish mystic, or the Zen are sort of a similar mystical sect. So this story is about a saint who comes to see the emperor as the emperor is approaching his deathbed, and asked to hear the names of his sons. And as he hears the names of his sons, each of the names has a meaning. So, you know, one of them is Murad, and which means an ambition. And the Sufi tells the, you know, emperor that he'll never achieve his Murad, and so on. In the end, he gets to the emperor's favorite son, whose name is Dara, which is the same as Darius. And the Sufi tells him, you know, this guy will meet the same fate as Darius did at the hands of Alexander, which is death. And the youngest son, Aurangzeb, the Sufi tells him that, yes, this one will be fit to be king. And in the war of succession that followed, it was true, Aurangzeb did become king. But Aurangzeb was a orthodox Muslim and a brilliant general, whereas his main rival, Dara Shikoh, was a pantheist. He translated the holy, you know, Hindu scriptures into Persian. He was a wine drinker, a poet. He was defeated. And in that moment, basically, Mughal India chose to take a much more orthodox path, which is less inclusive, and it fell apart some years later.
So the father's youngest son kind of ends the type of religion that the father believed in.
Well, the father was I think, a lot less orthodox than the son. And I think Aurangzeb was sort of, you know, very well known as a very orthodox and also rather intolerant emperor. And I think, you know, what the book is alluding to is that kind of intolerance is not the way forward. It wasn't the way forward then, and it's not the way forward now in Pakistan.
Do you think that story relates to today?
I think it does relate to today. I think what you see in a country like Pakistan is that there's a debate going on. There are people who are, you know, secularists, progressive, who want to see, you know, while being Muslims, who want to see a state that's built on, you know, democracy, rule of law, etc. And you see other people who are looking to the past, to, you know, ideal notions of what the great Islamic civilization was, for inspiration about how to go forward. And those two groups, you know, have not yet resolve their differences. They're sort of in the process of working those things out. And in that struggle, right now, suddenly comes this divisive issue of, you know, do you side with Afghanistan, a poor Muslim country next door, or do you side with the wealthy superpower that has in the past betrayed us, America, but in the cause of, you know, preventing terrorism? And that has really polarized the country. And what's gone, you know, what was a slow evolutionary process of these two groups engaging each other now has become a much more dangerous, you know, confrontation.
What are some of your concerns about what will happen to Pakistan if there is a military conflict in the wake of last week's terrorist attacks?
Well, my concern, my biggest concern is that I think the solution to terrorism is, you know, it's terrorism is a crime. I think it has to be tackled as crimes are, not the way that, you know, not by war. And crimes are tackled by having societies that come together and act against crime. And my concern is that in Pakistan, if there's a war, rather than making our society stronger, bringing us together, it'll divide Pakistan. And in that division and anarchy and, you know, bloodshed that may result, that's the sort of environment in which terrorism and crime thrives. That's why Osama bin Laden is in Afghanistan in the first place, because the place was destroyed by warfare. The society is in shreds. And that's my big fear of what will happen to Pakistan.
Your new novel, Moth Smoke, deals with some of the religious and political and lifestyle conflicts and differences within the country. Can you talk about a couple of those that you see as being particularly relevant for us to comprehend right now?
Well, the main character in Moth Smoke is a guy called Darashikoh Shahzad, and Daru, as he's known, is a bit down and out. He's a young banker who loses his job, and he's not very well connected, so it's a hard time finding another one, and eventually is driven to a point of crime. And I think his story is a story faced by a lot of the young middle-class people in Pakistan who aren't well connected, aren't wealthy. And I think, you know, the resentment of these people at inequalities, economic inequalities, is a lot of what feeds into the kinds of things that we in the West see as, you know, fundamentalism.
As you were growing up in Pakistan, did you watch a more extreme fundamentalism come in?
I think so, because when I was young, I didn't really remember, you know, seeing the kinds of armed groups that you see in Pakistan now. In the 80s, when I was in school, I still remember we used to have a lot of American students in the school. I went to an international school in Lahore, and there were a lot of American kids studying there. Their parents had been sent there as part of the U.S. aid missions or other things. And Pakistan was full of Americans, and it was also increasingly there were young guys with beards and, you know, Kalashnikovs that began to be seen throughout the country. And these were the guys who were being trained, you know, in the Mujahideen training camps that America had set up on the Afghanistan border. And that whole movement, that whole, you know, militant activity, you really didn't see much of before the 80s.
What was it like for you to be growing up in an atmosphere where more and more you saw people carrying Kalashnikovs?
I don't know. I mean, I guess you just take it for granted. You don't really think about it. Maybe in some ways it's like, you know, being an American kid growing up in an environment where, you know, kids are bringing firearms to school or something. It's what you think of as normal. And we thought really of America as this big ally. So you had, you know, we went to the mountains for summer vacation, and in the mountains you'd take a bus to get up there. And on the backs of the buses, our buses are very colorfully painted. There were these F-16s painted on the back, these American fighter planes that were given to Pakistan. And underneath that was Allahu Akbar, which is God is great. And so the idea of this militant Islam and being an American ally was actually all one concept in those days.
Was there a time when you felt that changed?
I mean, it changed very dramatically around the time I graduated from high school, when I went off to college in the States, which was 1989. At that time, the relationship was, I think, still relatively good. And then, you know, the Afghan War was won, the Soviets were driven out, and almost overnight, American aid disappeared, Pakistan was blacklisted. My cousins, who tried to go to college a couple of years later, found it a lot more difficult to get visas. And it was sort of hard to understand, but had come to be seen by America as, if not the enemy, as, you know, certainly not an ally.
My guest is Mohsen Hamid, author of the novel Moth Smoke. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Mohsen Hamid, author of the novel Moth Smoke. He grew up in Pakistan, where his family still lives. He went to college and law school in the United States and just moved from Manhattan to London. Your novel is in part about what it's like to be young in a big city in Pakistan. And talk a little bit about the kind of similarities and differences between urban life in Pakistan and urban life in London or New York?
I think it's interesting because, you know, Pakistan is an incredibly diverse country. And we have deserts in the south, and we've got glaciers in the north, and we have river valleys in between. And the people are like that, too. So in a big Pakistani city like Lahore, you have a party crowd, which is completely, you know, would be at home in any nightclub in New York. You've got, you know, young intellectuals who are, you know, just like the people holed up in the libraries at, you know, Harvard and Princeton. You've got, you know, your regular folks who are sports fans. So I think there all of these sorts of groups of people exist. I think many Americans, if they came and met young Pakistanis in cities, would be shocked at how similar these people are, especially since so many of them speak English as well. But that said, I think these groups that I'm talking about are still a relatively small share of the population. There may be millions of these people, but out of 140 million, that's still not that many. I think, you know, for the young urban Pakistanis, like young urban people everywhere, they're looking for ways to have a good time, given the constraints of the society around them.
Yeah, and I think some of the characters in your novels go to discos and...
Yeah, well, there's no disco. That's the whole thing. I think the one thing which is very different between Pakistan and a place like America is that because of the restrictions, you know, that are posed on the society, everything happens covertly. So people have parties in their houses. You know, alcohol is all bootlegged. And, you know, many people, of course, party without drinking. Most people don't drink alcohol. And, you know, dating is all very much frowned upon. So it may just be, you know, a walk after class in college with somebody that you really like, as opposed to, you know, really going on a date. So everything happens, but it happens in a more covert way.
Now, you're writing a new novel now that has to do with fundamentalism in Pakistan, is that right?
Well, I mean, sort of, but not exactly in Pakistan. It's a story of a young Muslim guy who's working, you know, in the West, in New York, actually, and who, you know, begins to sort of encounter his own spirituality in a way. But that it just frightens the hell out of everybody he works with. And it's a story of what that misunderstanding is about.
What is it about?
I think it's a fear just born out of mutual ignorance. I think that, you know, the vast majority of Pakistanis who, you know, are Muslim and are observant are completely non-threatening folks who also will watch Baywatch, which is probably the most popular TV program you can get on a satellite dish. And they work in banks and offices and wear ties and, you know, drive scooters and cars and are perfectly normal people. But for some reason, the image of the Muslim in America is really a frightening one. And so the book is really about how that happens and how it's possible to be a guy who is actually very secular as a Muslim but is still completely misunderstood.
Is this in part about yourself, in terms of being misunderstood?
Well, not really. I think, you know, I don't feel particularly misunderstood. I think that, you know, both because of my background, the colleges and law school and whatnot that I went to in the States, and the fact that I had a job in New York City, etc., I never felt particularly misunderstood in that sense. But I saw other people, perhaps, whose English was not as good, or who didn't go to graduate school in the United States, or, you know, for whatever other reason, seemed more foreign. And I think the attitude, you know, towards those people is very different. Like, for example, I would sometimes sit in a cab with friends of mine in New York, and the guy would be a Pakistani guy. And before I'd have a chance to say hi to him and start chatting with him in Urdu, the person I was with would start speaking to him, and, you know, in a very sort of brusque kind of way. And then after that would, you know, say, you know, would make, perhaps make a comment about the way he was driving, the way he looked, in a way that sounded, you know, vaguely uncomfortable. And that was really interesting, to be sitting there as a Pakistani who could speak with this guy and understand him if I chose to, but sort of in the seat next to an American who didn't.
Talk more about that feeling.
Well, I think, you feel a bit split. It's sort of a feeling of being between two worlds, you know, having sort of love for two different things in two different places and understanding that there's a complete misconception between the two. So, you know, you want to sort of step in and translate and say that, you know, actually this guy, if you were to have a conversation with him, is a pharmacist. He couldn't finish his, you know, his degree to get his qualifications to be a pharmacist, so he's driving a cab. He sends back almost all of his after-tax income to his family in Pakistan. He's basically a good guy. You know, he just looks a bit scary to you. And you sort of want to say these things and interpret. The problem is that you can only do that sort of in the lives of the people that you come into contact with.
The title of your book is Moth Smoke. What does that image mean?
Well, moth smoke is based on one of the fundamental images in our poetry, which is the desire of a moth for the flame of a candle, the way that moths are drawn to light. And that desire is always considered a metaphor for different things. It's a desire for a human being's unity with God, which is, you know, self-understanding and approaching the divine. It's also the story of a lover who's attracted, you know, by love and is consumed by the love. In moth smoke, the image is not the image of the moth approaching the flame of the candle, which is how it normally is in our poetry, but of what happens afterwards. And what it alludes to is, you know, Pakistan was a dream. It was a country created as the homeland for the Muslims of India. And now that we have that dream and the moth has entered the flame, what are we going to do? What's the future? What happens afterwards? So in that sense, you know, moth smoke is sort of what happens after the dream is consummated.
Any thoughts you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I'd like to say is just in America, I think right now amongst many people I've spoken to, there is a feeling that, you know, something incredibly wrong has happened, which it has, and something tragic has happened, which it has, but also that a great evil needs to be avenged. And my only thing is, as somebody who considers himself a New Yorker as well as a Lahori, is that, you know, that vengeance should be extremely careful, because there are millions of people living in places like Pakistan whose lives are about to be disrupted. And, you know, the same way that you wouldn't tell a police force to start firing into a crowd, you don't want to tell a military to start bombing these countries, you know, in a way to stop a few people from committing criminal acts. So the one thing that I think is important at a time like this is actually compassion. And hopefully that will help us all going forward.
Well, I wish you the best.
Thanks very much.
And I hope your family is safe, and I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mohsen Hamid is the author of the novel Moth Smoke. Our interview was recorded yesterday. He spoke to us from London. This is Fresh Air.